Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing buying a car the right way.
Right, buddy. Transportation, that's one of those big expenses. We spend a lot of money on transportation every single year, but every few years, hopefully not too much more often than that, folks are oftentimes faced with the very large purchase of a vehicle, and we're going to dedicate an entire episode towards buying a car the right way.
Yeah, and well, I would say this. If you're buying a car every year, you're doing it wrong, okay?
Definitely.
You should be leasing if you're doing that, and we don't really recommend leasing, but if you need a new car every
year
or two,
don't do that either.
At least, that's probably the only situation in which that makes sense.
And we're already off to a bad start.
And you can do it the wrong way. There are ways to do it the wrong way, and leasing is kind of sort of the wrong way too.
Exactly.
But, we'll get into all our thoughts on that in this episode. But Matt, before we get to that, I wanted to mention that there was this study that came out from UCLA, and they basically said that there isn't a lot of learning loss if you're watching videos or listening to content at 2x speed. And I thought
you going to say that again for all of our listeners listening at 2.5, slow it down a little
bit. I'll slow it down so you can understand me. Now, so I just wanted
everybody that is listening to 2X is going to hear that and it's going to mess with their heads. Like, wait, what did I just hear?
So I'm personally the kind of person who, there's a lot of podcasts I enjoy listening to, and I don't quite have enough time to fit them all in. And if I want to fit most of them in, then I do have to listen at a faster speed. And so depending on the podcast, I do listen at somewhere between like 1.7 and 2x speed. And it's good to know that, like, I will say, I don't think I'm getting quite as much. I don't think I'm retaining quite as much as I would if I was to listen at 1x. But also, it's almost harder for me to listen to something at the normal speed these days.
Oh, shut up.
I almost need it to be like at least 1.2, or I'm like, what's wrong with these people?
Sounds like they're just talking way too slowly.
Exactly.
Well, okay, so I'm going to call BS on this study because I, like you, I listen to a lot of podcasts, we listen to a lot of audiobooks, and I want this to be true, right? Like, I want to read this study, this report, and say, there you go. See, like, you can listen to something at 2x speed and retain just as much information. But dude, come on, this is confirmation bias, right? Like, this is something we want to be true. And so you come across a story, it looks like it's well researched out there in UCLA. But if you search, like, there's a lot of other studies too that point to the fact that, oh, in fact, it does reduce your ability to retain information. But like you said, I am okay with that. I think as long as folks are able to make the decision knowing the facts. And so if I know that I'm only going to be able to retain 80 or 90% of the information, but if that means I'm able to listen to twice as much stuff because I'm listening to it at 2x speed, then that's a trade-off, yeah. Right? Like, in all throughout life, we make trade-offs, and this is one of those. And so if you are a high consumer of audio content, this is good news, as long as you are aware of the decisions you're making.
Yeah, so I think maybe the ideal range for people is somewhere between like 1.5 and 1.7, if you can handle it, if you want to listen at that speed. And the first time you hear it, you're like, who does this? It sounds almost garbled, but once you kind of get used to it.
Yeah. It's like building a muscle, like your brain
completely
gets better at it. And I will say, sometimes I'll flip something on and by default it's on at like 1.5, and Kate's like, whoa, like, this sounds like it's on warp speed. But over the years, she has slowly kind of ramped up her ability to listen to something faster as well. And she said specifically that if I listen to it first at kind of 1.2, she can then slowly ramp up, because you get used to the way somebody speaks, to the way they talk. And the other thing too, man, it depends on what you're listening to as well, right? Because if I'm listening to an audiobook, like a narrative, a story, even 2.5 is not difficult for me, because it oftentimes depends on who's narrating, right?
Yeah.
But if it's a podcast and they're really diving into like very technical things and they're talking about the economy and the jobs report and just different things like that,
you slow that down a little bit.
Slow it down, because there's a lot of technical information that is more difficult to, you know, when you're jumping from one bit of information to the next, to the next, to the next, and none of them are really linked, it's difficult, I think, to follow along at a really rapid clip.
Yeah. All right. Well, just blessings on you if you want to listen to How to Money a little bit faster than 1x. That's totally cool. And a lot of the podcasting apps have made it so much easier to actually do that. I know Google Podcasts, it's like you can go 1.6, 1.7, 1.8.
Yeah, it literally only used to be like 1x, 1.5x, 2x.
Yeah.
But now a lot of them have all of those fine adjustments that you can go in there and
kind of like those beer ratings on Untappd, you know. It used to be like half a point, and now I think you can dial it in pretty specifically.
Oh,
now.
Really?
Although I don't really post my beers there anymore, so.
I tried to, but the last time I was on there, I thought it was still doing just quarter of a point.
Oh, I thought you could dial it in more than that. Maybe
really?
I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I really don't get on there very often. So, all right, but let's mention the beer that we're having on this episode. This one is called Pothole City. It's a Rocky Road Stout. It's by Pipeworks Brewing, and we'll let you know our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode. But, Matt, on to the topic at hand. Let's talk about buying a car the right way.
And, or truck, or van.
Yeah, exactly. Any of your transportation needs. And some of the most important financial decisions that we make are done infrequently. And because of that, Matt, we feel like a little rusty every time we perform that task.
Right.
Even just doing your taxes, you're like, how do I do this again?
Yep.
It's coming to be that time. Fortunately, there's software to help you out with that. Or
if you take really
someone
good,
that you pay.
Or if you take really good notes, that's what I do, is I kind of keep this document that I refer back to, and I just have everything listed out step by step.
There you go.
Makes it super quick.
See?
Quick and easy.
So the average person buys a car one in every 6 years. And so that's plenty of time for most of us to completely forget how the process works by the next time we need to buy a car. It makes me think of traveling abroad these days. It's been a while for pretty much all of us. I know some folks have still been traveling abroad, but there's the truth that there are a lot of countries that won't even allow us to visit their shores right now. And so there's a lot more questions we have when we're booking that trip. Do I need trip insurance? Is the country I want to go to even accepting visitors from the U.S.? What sort of vaccination documentation do I need? How early do I even need to get to the airport again? Those are the kind of questions.
That's always a fun one to be like, how long does it take to get there?
To go through security and stuff like that. Like, I've forgotten at this point. So we all need this refresher. And so that's kind of what this episode is. It's a refresher on buying a car the right way. And obviously part of that has to do with kind of what's currently happening in the car space. We've seen a lot of change.
That's right. Yeah. In a similar way, the car market has experienced a lot of turmoil. So if you bought a car 6 years ago, the way that you go about buying a car has changed significantly. We've seen a huge shift, especially over the past 18 months in pricing and just different purchasing dynamics. A global pandemic led to a chip shortage, and then that chip shortage led to supply chain issues. All of the problems created a tighter car market, resulting in fewer cars on the lot and much, much higher prices. Edmunds is even predicting that the average price of a used car is going to surpass $30,000 this year. And that's right. I actually said used cars. The average used car is going to be over $30,000. That's a lot of money for a secondhand form of transportation. And because so much is at stake here, it's crucial that you take the proper steps to make sure that you're going about things in the right way.
Yeah, you don't want to buy a $30,000 lemon. That's for sure. And so let's talk about kind of more of what's changed in recent years and how those shifts impact us as consumers if we're in the car market. Matt, you mentioned the average price of a used car is going to hit $30,000. Which is true. I see that happening this year. But the average price of a new car costs $47,000 now, which is a heck of a lot more, right? And on top of that, even fancier new cars are getting launched. For instance, like the new Jeep Grand Wagoneer, the starting price is almost $90,000. So you can get that ride up into six figures. And I'm sure it's nice. It's got the perfectly coiffed interior and the fancy screen or something like that.
Sound system.
Yeah.
Everything you could want.
I'm sure it's lovely, but there's just so much more we have to think through as car prices expand and as fancier cars are put out there on the market. And there's just so much at stake, so much of your money at stake with that next car purchase. And here's what you need to think about too. That $90,000 could easily become $1 million in 30 years if you left it to grow in the stock market. So there is this reality that where you allocate your money makes a big difference in your ability to build more wealth. And if more of your money is going towards the four wheels that you're riding around in, it's going to detract in a big way from your ability to build wealth the way you want.
That's right. And why has it got to be four wheels, man? Why can't it be one of those three-wheeled vehicles you see driving down
the ones that kind of
Moreland?
Like Batmobiles?
Yeah. Yeah. They've got like two wheels up front for steering, but there's only like one like bigger wheel in the back.
I still don't understand why people get those, but they look kind of interesting.
There's a couple of those that we see driving around the neighborhood. But, you know, folks already know this as well. But one of the other things that we've seen change over the years is that folks have gotten way more comfortable buying a used car, sight unseen, based on just different pictures of the car on the internet, descriptions. I'm specifically thinking about Carvana, but CarMax as well. They both have led that charge and are the two big names in the used car buying market these days. GM, they just launched Car Bravo to be another competitor in the space. And they're not just selling GM vehicles as well. They're selling all types of vehicles. So generally speaking, we do like these sites. They've made it easier to shop online for a vehicle. And most of us are looking for some more convenience in our lives. They'll often deliver it to you, right? Carvana, they've got that 7-day return policy. And CarMax, they've got that 30-day return policy. This gives you plenty of time to take it to the mechanic and know if you'll like it. But this is another reason we're talking about this, because the way, just the actual mechanics of what it looks like to purchase a new vehicle has changed significantly.
Yeah. 5 years ago, buying a car on the internet was not really a thing.
Or you were taking a risk.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it was a new thing. Like, we purchased our Honda Odyssey on CarMax, like, about, I guess it was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah,
now
that was kind
I don't
of
no.
Towards the beginning, really.
It was kind of like this
launch.
Novel idea, and you and I were talking. We're like, "Ooh, do we get to see it come down like the car vending machine?" Like, we're picturing it like two little kids, like we're gonna watch a gumball like go down the spiral.
That was kind of their initial claim to fame, was that vending machine.
Yeah,
and now they have one literally like on the downtown connector in Atlanta. I know they've built ones in other locations too, as they've expanded nationwide.
I always look at it. It is cool.
Yeah, but it is this new way of buying a car, and I guess not so new anymore.
Yeah,
but
no.
But it is one of those things where it's important to note that buying online is really helpful, I think, in a lot of ways, or at least searching online, some of those sites, has made the used car buying process a little more transparent. But in addition to those newer companies that have gotten pretty dominant in recent years, some of the older companies like Craigslist and Auto Trader, even just the classic for sale sign in the car window, those are still legitimate ways to buy a car. All those options are still around. And the great thing is that, unlike those other sites we mentioned, the price isn't fixed. Whereas like Carvana, you're not going to be able to negotiate or be like, "Can I get $1,500 off that price?" And they're like, "Nope, the price is the price." Well, you
they
can
just stare at you. Just like,
that's right.
Wait, what are you saying?
When it's a private sale, you can haggle, and that's a beautiful thing. That might sound awful to you, though. I think that some people, they're like haggling.
I don't want to interact with another human being.
Exactly.
Just let me do what I want to do.
And some people don't take joy in that. I personally do take joy in that. I like to kind of negotiate the price, but some people find that to be appalling, and I get it. But yeah, you'll want to take extra precautions to stay safe if you're meeting private car sellers all over your town. We would say meeting in the parking lot of a police station is certainly one way to help keep yourself safer when you're buying a used car from an individual. But just remember, even with the advent of these online buying services, you can still go the old school route. And sometimes that is actually going to save you the most money, in large part, Matt, because some of those online car buying sites, they don't really have many older models up for sale. Mm-hmm. So the starting price point is usually $14,000, $15,000. And if you're looking for a car, a great used car in the $5,000 to $15,000 range, you're not going to find that there.
It can be difficult. And honestly, that's what we found when we purchased our van. So we purchased about 5 years ago. And at the time, it was about 5 years old. And that was the oldest Honda Odyssey that we could find. And for us, man, we were like, okay, this is used, but we were still paying a lot of money for a vehicle. That was something that we had to grapple with. And if we wanted to save more, we would have had to look at a more traditional method of buying.
That's right. For a lot of How to Money listeners who do want to save a lot, they want to drive something that is older and cheaper, online shopping is probably not going to get the job done. You're going to have to look to some of those more old school methods.
You're going to have to look at something a little bit older than 5 years old.
Yeah.
One of the other changes we've seen too, man, like in the past several years, is that we've seen the number of electric vehicles on the road skyrocket. However, that being said, range anxiety, like, that is still an issue when it comes to electric vehicle adoption. But massive strides have already been made since the first EVs debuted. For instance, I saw that Mercedes, they just revealed this concept car that they claim is going to have a range of 620 miles, which is awesome.
That's impressive. Yeah.
That is comparable to what a typical combustion engine powered vehicle would be able to get.
Yeah, on one fill up.
Yeah. But, you know, like, once automakers are able to hit the 500 to 700 mile range on a single charge, mass adoption is likely going to occur. I truly believe that's what's kept folks from jumping on EVs even more, because you can't have this benefit, right? So with a typical gasoline-powered car. You can't have a car that where you could drive 600 miles if you wanted to without stopping and then take it away. I think for most people, that's what caused the anxiety. Like, that's what caused the problems. However, like, if in some bizarro world, if gasoline-powered cars only got like 200 or 300 miles per fill up, there would be no hesitation, I think, when it came to folks switching over to EVs. See, because that's what they would be used to.
I will say, I think you're a little bit wrong on this, because I think the average gas car, when you...
I want my miles, man.
but when you do the miles, you're not getting 500 miles before you fill up. You're getting maybe 325, 350. And so it's important to realize that that's probably... But here's the thing.
No, so 30 miles per gallon on a 20-gallon tank? That's not, 600 miles.
You're not getting 30 miles a gallon on that Honda
Odyssey. Not on the Odyssey, but dude, a lot of people are.
A lot of those tanks are then 15 miles. I'm just saying, like, I think maybe let's say you're getting 350, but here's the thing: when you fill up at the gas station, it's much quicker than it is to charge, and that's part of the slowdown in adoption, is because the charging still takes so long. And so that's why the greater mileage, I think, is needed for in order for people to adopt EVs in higher numbers.
Totally. But I think even just like the idea, like the fact that this was something that was available to people, even if they weren't taking advantage of it, or even if maybe in a perfect world the mileage sheet says that you should be able to do this, to then take that away, people don't like things being taken away from them, right? And so from a psychological standpoint, I think that that has been a major hurdle for folks as well. But there's good news, right? Because the median range of a new electric vehicle surpassed 250 miles last year, and that's plenty of range for the way that most folks drive. And so while EVs are typically more expensive up front, some of them still come with a federal tax credit, and plus they're going to save you a solid chunk on gas and maintenance over time. And then on top of that, if a 2 to 3 year old EV makes sense for your family, you can save even more by letting someone else take that depreciation hit.
That's right, because those first 3 years of ownership are where you see the biggest depreciation hit come. And so, yeah, if you're opting for that slightly older electric vehicle, that might be the sweet spot for a lot of people.
Yeah.
As long as the range works for you.
So do you, when we're talking about electric vehicles, do you say EV typically? Like, so the reason I ask this is because, so our oldest daughter, her name is Evie, and 8 years ago when we named her EVs, as electric vehicles, as a popular term, like, that wasn't on our radar at all. I mean, electric vehicles existed, but I think you just called them, oh, that's an electric car or something like that. But we often refer to electric cars now as EVs. And I feel like we'd name, it's like 10 years ago, if somebody named their daughter Siri or or Alexa.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably pretty annoying right now.
Yes.
But yeah, obviously,
I think people stop
EVs
doing that at this
aren't
point.
Going to be nearly as ubiquitous in our language.
Right.
As
well,
Alexa.
And at this point, I'll share, like, I drove
and
an
I'm
EV
sorry for everybody
years.
Whose device is just activated. I just realized you're not supposed to actually say those names on podcasts anymore, aren't you?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
Well, so I'll share that I had an EV for a long time. I bought a Nissan Leaf in 2014. Part of it was because of the tax credit that you mentioned, Matt, which helped, you know, plunge the price down in a big way. And you know, there weren't a lot of other folks at that period of time, almost 10 years ago, willing to take that plunge into the electric vehicle market.
And you're an early adopter.
Yeah, well, and I get it. There was a big discrepancy in what you got then versus what you can get now. So the range on my Leaf, I think, was something like 80 miles to the charge.
That was on a warm day.
Yeah. That's right. Well, the conditions certainly affect, like, how many miles you're going to get out of it, right? And so it worked great for us as a two-car family living in town where my job was, you know, 5 or 6 miles away from the house. But I get that it didn't make sense for a lot of folks. But like you said, that's changed quite a bit. If the average range on a new EV is 250 miles as of last year, that's a big jump for a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. And it pushes that into the range of making sense. So I would say, yeah, with the added variety of electric vehicles that are on the market, the far superior battery range,
a lot more options.
There's
now,
just so many more, for people to consider. I think it makes sense, and it's something that people should look into.
Also, keep an eye out for the first electric van that rolls out.
I'm looking for, well, that's supposed to be the Volkswagen van.
Yeah,
year,
you've been
right?
talking about the ID bus or whatever for forever now, but you and I were recently talking about how Rivian, they need to create a minivan on their, you know, RT, whatever their Rivian truck is called. They need to build a sweet looking van on that truck platform, and that will be the first time that I am actually tempted to consider a new vehicle. But I'm probably still not going to do it, even if they do that.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, when you look at the numbers, and when we're talking about how much we're spending on a car, it's easy to look at just the sticker price. But really, we need to look at the total cost of ownership over a period of time. And the one additional thing that electric vehicles have going for them is over, you know, 10, 15 years, a much lower cost of ownership because there's less to go wrong with those vehicles and you're not paying for gas fill-ups every week, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to make a big difference over time if you decide to go electric. But enough about electric vehicles. We have more to get to. There's a whole lot of stuff you need to think about before you even start browsing the internet for that new car. And we'll get to our thoughts on that right after this break.
Back, and we're talking about buying cars the right way. And yeah, Joel, like you mentioned, we've got a lot more to talk about on the how-to front here. But it's also important to explain maybe a bit more about how we think about cars, because we think of them mainly as point A to point B transportation vehicles.
That's true.
So, you know, people who think of their cars as their baby, they're going to come to a different conclusion about how much they should pay for a car.
Yeah, the people who are putting the fake eyelashes on the headlights, we don't do that.
Yeah, we don't do that. Or the antlers at Christmas. That's a different breed of folks as well. But the pure and simple fact is that cars are liabilities. They're not assets. And so keep this in mind, that buying a car that's 7 to 10 years old, it won't just save you quite a bit of money. We think that it actually comes with some legitimate psychological benefits as well. Because, man, sometimes we think that a big purchase, like a new car, we think it's going to make us happy. But we're here to tell you that it won't. No one is judging you for the car that you drive, or actually if they are, like that's their own problem. Don't let those social pressures cause you to overspend on something that you really actually don't care all that much about. Being comfortable, driving an older car is a good thing. The ability for you to take that money that you're saving and put that towards retirement, that is a good thing. It's not necessarily that we want you to deny yourself. However, we do want you to focus on other goals that might be a bit more important.
Yeah, man, I think you're right. And I think sometimes those societal pressures can cause us to make decisions with our money that don't align with our values or that don't align with our desires for what our life is going to look like. It's just kind of like, well, everybody else around me is doing this, and so maybe I should do it too. Mm-hmm. And I think when we reconsider what a vehicle looks like or means to us in our lives, it can cause us actually to dig a little deeper and address what it is that's truly going to make us happy. Because
yeah, it's not the car that's going to make us happy. It's
right,
other stuff.
The new car scent doesn't last very long, you know? And so why not cut straight to the chase and figure out that it's the things like close relationships, meaningful work that actually, you know, make us happy instead of taking a $47,000 detour, figuring
average
those things
new
out,
car price.
Yeah, further yeah. down the road, or a $30,000 detour by spending the average amount on a used car. Mm-hmm. Plus, you and I, we kind of view crossing that 200,000 mile mark as a badge of honor. Like if you've been driving your car long enough that you've hit that, you take some pride in hitting that number.
Or you should, at
yeah.
least. Yeah.
And so, and with car reliability being pretty great across the board these days, even that threshold isn't a death sentence for your car. Personally, Matt, I'm at 165,000 miles on Homer.
Congrats.
You're at what? How many do you have?
I think a little over 120,000 on Hal.
Okay.
Which are the names of our vans, by the way, if folks are wondering. Listeners actually named our vans. Someone stuck with the H motif since we're talking about Hondas. Hal is for the sci-fi robot. Homer is for the Atlanta Braves mascot that likes to run around and mess with people in the stands. And so that naming convention won the contest.
That's right, yeah. And so I think really, you know, my car is a 2006. I think part of this is we just need a mental reframe on, you know, when it comes to how we view our car. And it's okay for some people to be car obsessed and to say that's my craft beer equivalent and I put more of my money there. But for most of us, this is a place where we can save substantial amounts of money, enabling us to live the lives we actually want.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you mentioned how like it should be a badge of honor. Somebody should make like a bumper sticker with different mileage amounts on there, sort of like achievement badges, you know, like if it's all about gamification and if we can find different ways to like mentally shift not only how you see your own vehicle, but how like the people around you see it, we should literally be wearing that as a badge of honor. And then as you progress in miles, you get to add like new stickers and all of a sudden, like instead of like 13.1 for like a half, you know, 26.2, I want it to be actual miles that your car is currently on.
There you go. Advertise it to everyone. I always liked the bumper sticker that people would put on like a crummy old Toyota Camry or something that was like 20 years old and it said, "Don't let this car fool you. My treasure is in heaven." And it's just ironic. I like that.
Well, one of the other steps to buying a car that you must not skip is to ask yourself if you even need this car. We want you to assess your current situation. Just because you've always gotten a new ride every 4 to 6 years That doesn't mean that you should continue the trend. We want you to ask yourself, can we get by as a one-car family? Like, what's the current and future state of working from home? What does that look like for you? Something like 1 in 7 jobs are work from home now. And if you used to go into the office, but you don't anymore, it's worth questioning whether or not you actually need another car before you buy it.
Yeah, you might be all about the idea of replacing that car because it's getting too old. And then you're like, wait a second. I don't drive nearly as much as I used to.
Wait a second. Our cars sit in the driveway 99% of the time anyway, and there's always at least one home. Maybe we only need one car.
Exactly. And that is so true about cars, is that they sit idle so much of the time. Something like 96% of the time.
Yeah.
Your car is not in use. And so, yeah, if you can figure out that extra 4% of the time, you can save a bundle. And yeah, there are other ways to get around besides cars. That's part of it too, Matt. And that's what we want to emphasize, is cargo bikes. They're one of our favorite ways for people to haul their stuff around, haul their kiddos around. Mm-hmm. Go get groceries. Just get
drop my kids off this morning at school on the bike, even though it was 35 degrees. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. And yeah,
stay healthy. Sometimes they'll complain, but it's an event.
True. And what we're asking people to do is to look ahead and forecast their needs, not just get what they want. And Matt, you mentioned working from home, but I'm also thinking about size of the family here, right? If you're thinking about growing your family, maybe adding a kiddo or two into the mix, then that motorcycle probably isn't going to cut it anymore. Or the two-door Honda Civic. Like, it's just not going to be the best purchase.
You're probably not going to be able to get the kid out of the car seat in the back of a two-door.
Yes, but
it's possible. I know there are people listening right now who have done that. However, we tried that one time in a friend's car, and it was extremely, extremely difficult.
Well, true. And I think, you know, for other folks, let's say they've already got a station wagon and they're about to bring home their second kiddo. Well, a station wagon still works for a family of four.
Totally.
So you might not necessarily need to upgrade. These are the kind of questions you're going to want to ask before you actually start shopping, is like, do I need this? Do I have other alternate forms of transportation? Am I actually driving nearly as much as I used to? Like, do we need to be a two-car family? Could we be a one-car family? If you start to ask these questions, you might find that your need, or like the need you thought you had for to buy a new car, goes away completely.
That's right. You might just discover that it was, in fact, a want. So you want to make sure that the car that you're buying, you know, works for your family and your lifestyle, but you also want to make sure that it fits with your budget. And a good rule of thumb that we've come up with that makes sense to us is that if you combine your net worth with your annual salary, and then you take 10% of that total, well, we feel that that is how much car that you should be able to afford. So for example, let's say that you're in your 20s, maybe you've got $25,000 in student loans still, but you make $100,000 a year. So that gets you to $75,000, right? So you should be looking at a car that costs around $7,500. I think a lot of folks listening right now, they're not going to like this formula. But we feel that this is a good practice. We think this is a good method, a good rule of thumb in order to spend less on vehicles, spend less on expenses that don't need to cost so much, and instead funnel that money towards long-term investing.
Mm-hmm.
So another example, maybe you're in your 30s. Let's say you've got some assets. You've got $100,000 in retirement. Maybe you make $150,000. And so for you, if that's your situation, that means you can afford a $25,000 car. I'm pretty sure we're going to get some pushback from a lot of people who have vehicles that cost more than maybe what this little formula would allow them to purchase. But again, we think that this is, if you are able to sit down with some easy, simple back of the napkin math, we think that this is going to get you within the range of what we think is financially responsible, especially as you are seeking to pursue something like some financial freedom or financial independence.
Yeah, Matt, I've always liked to go even more stringent than this rule for myself, because my goals for my money are not to pour it into A to B transportation. So it all depends also on how you think about cars.
That's
and
right.
So for us, we're saying we don't prioritize them all that heavily. And you're listening to a podcast about personal finance. So of course, we are going to try to persuade you to think similarly to the way we think when it comes to your money and how more of your money should be going towards investing so that you can grow it, not towards a depreciating asset.
Totally.
And let's keep talking about like what you need to do when it comes to researching that. Certainly, you need to research your budget, how much you can afford. But then you also need to look into the reliability of the car that you want. That's one of those things that you want to assess before you start hitting up used car lots or scouring Craigslist. And so, yeah, does the car that you want actually tend to hold up over time? You've talked, Matt, many times on the podcast about the car you drove in college and how it was not very reliable and how it ended up costing you a lot of money because of that. So it's not just the sticker price of the car, but it's how much you're going to be putting into it along the way.
Yeah, it's probably the least reliable vehicle and most expensive to have serviced.
Yeah, and Consumer Reports consistently ranks it as like one of the least reliable vehicles.
We're talking about, I had an early 90s Land Rover Range Rover.
Yes.
So there you go.
Yep. Yeah, and so if you, I'll be honest.
A beautiful dope car.
Yeah.
However, if when you're looking at the money, it doesn't make any sense.
They look great. They cost you a lot of money. Yeah. So, you know, we place a high importance on reliability as a metric when buying a used car. And some brands consistently perform better, but be sure to check into the specific year, make, and model, because reliability varies over time. You might find that the 2009 model was not so great, but the 2011, they'd improved it quite a bit. And so you're just going to kind of want to dig into those details. Checking the reliability rankings can be helpful when it comes to ensuring that you're not buying, you know, a car that's going to present a lot of issues once it's yours.
Like, you're talking about maintenance costs, but that's something else that you want to factor in, because that might be one of the reasons that you would prefer to go with a new car, right? You don't want to have to deal with the hassle or the cost of going to the mechanic. But the truth is that what you'll pay to maintain a used vehicle, if you've been savvy as a consumer, it really isn't all that much. The average 10-year-old car costs just over $400 to maintain every single year. You're going to pay less in 1 year owning and driving a used car than just what one monthly payment would cost you on a new one. So keep that in mind. Oftentimes we overblow maintenance costs, but in reality, it is much, much less.
That's right, Matt. I think we often overestimate the amount of money that we're going to spend fixing up the old car that we have. We're like, that's just going to be a money pit. But when you look at the numbers, that's just not true. That a 10-year-old car is going to cost you a whole lot less. And it's also actually going to be, for the most part, reliable. Obviously, you want to make sure that you find a used car that's more reliable than just the average one. But let's also talk about how we feel about new cars. And I'm sure people can infer at this point that we're not big fans, that we don't usually push people in the direction of buying a new car. And we already talked about how pricey new cars are, how they're so much more expensive than used ones. Although there are some cases when buying a new car isn't the worst thing that you could do. Actually, I wrote an article on our site about when it might make sense for some folks to buy a new car. And so if you're the kind of person who's up for keeping the same car for at least a decade, then I would say buying new isn't a terrible idea. If you're like, listen, I want to know what's wrong with it. I don't want to chance it to a previous owner. I want to make all these decisions for this car, but I'm going to own it for a long time. I think that's a different situation. And if you're in money year number 7, basically, yeah, if you've reached this point of financial independence, and I feel like this is a splurge that you can make. You can afford to buy a new car at this point because it's a drop in the bucket compared to your overall net worth. And yeah, for most folks, though, we would say it's still a bad financial move. And it's an even worse financial move if you're looking to buy a new luxury car. And that is because of, like, what you mentioned, Matt, with the rising EV adoption. You stand to lose even more money now buying especially a luxury gas-powered car, because those are going to depreciate, I'm predicting, more quickly in the coming years, because there's going to be so many great luxury EVs that people are gravitating towards.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. I mean, and those are the ones that we're really seeing stand out. Have you seen pictures of the Lucid sedan?
Yeah.
That thing is pure awesomeness.
It's all fancy.
Looks so freaking cool. And, you know, another thing too, like, you can buy a nice used car and it doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg. Consumer Reports, they always make these great lists of the best used cars to buy under a certain price point. And so we'll make sure to link to their list of, I think they've got a list of best used cars that's under $10,000. We'll make sure to put that in our show notes for this episode. But don't think that just because the average price of a used car is at $30,000 that you have to come even close to that number, because you don't.
Yeah, I think so. I think we benchmark against that number. We're like, all right, I'm gonna go super cheap and I'm gonna buy something that's $25,000. It's like, no, you don't even have to do that.
Or even just like worse than that, right? Subscribing to the average and saying, all right, I guess, you know, we're gonna shoot for something around $30,000. Maybe we'll even go a little bit above average because we're unique and special.
And we're treating ourselves. Right. Well, I think, yeah, another question that comes up when people are buying a used car is, what about certified pre-owned? Is that the best way to go? And I think a lot of people instantly assume that if it's a certified pre-owned vehicle, that it's been taken care of so much better. Or it is, of course, it's worth the extra few thousand dollars that the dealership is trying to charge for that. I mean, they told me there was a 1,000-point inspection on that vehicle, so it must be worth the price that they're asking.
Oh, for you, we'll give yours the 10,000-point inspection. It's like, what do these points mean?
Right, exactly.
It doesn't mean anything anymore.
But we would say not all CPO designations are made the same. Like, different dealerships take a different tact towards what that means. And like I was saying, you're going to pay a good bit more for any certified pre-owned vehicle. So if you're looking to find the best value, that's not the best route to take. Whether you go certified pre-owned or not, we still want you to have that car inspected by a mechanic that you trust. Because, yeah, we're not completely against certified pre-owned as a designation, but it's not a silver bullet for buying used cars. It's not like, all right, if I go in that direction, I'm not going to have any headaches. That is not the case.
That's right. And so we've talked a lot. There's been a lot of lead up to actually buying a vehicle. But after the break, we're going to get to how you can actually make that purchase.
All right, Matt, I feel like we've been long-winded thus far. There's been a lot to talk about when it comes to buying a car, but it is...
Talking about cars is fun.
Yeah, it is. I think it's fun.
I think it is, too. I mean, and I think that's oftentimes why folks end up spending a little bit more on their vehicles, because it's just something, you know, we say that, oh, it's just transportation from point A to point B. But it is. It's got this other thing wrapped up in it, right? Yeah. And it causes us oftentimes to spend more than we know we should.
And, well, and we've all got non-negotiables when it comes to what we want in a car. And that is okay. It is okay to have some standards. Like for us, once we had our third kid, it was the power sliding
automatic
doors.
Automatic. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. We're like, we're not getting... But we were able to find literally a $5,000 Honda Odyssey a couple of years ago that had that feature. And it had some other things that we weren't even expecting. We're like, wow, they made them really nice in 2006. Like, I was shocked that they had that many features back then. But there have to be some things that you're willing to say no to in order to save money,
right?
Like, that's kind of, life is a series of trade-offs. And yeah, if you want to be able to invest more of your money, well, then buying a cheaper vehicle is one way to help you do that. But enough about that. Let's start discussing how to go about buying. And let's maybe start with talking about financing a car and our thoughts on that.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, basically our advice is don't do it.
Don't do it. End of discussion.
And yeah.
Do you have any more points?
Well, basically just that, you know, we've seen a massive amount of inflation in used car and new car prices. Those have been the leading edge of some of those inflationary numbers that we've been seeing. And in normal times, though, cars are a depreciating asset. And so we'd prefer for you not to finance something that's quickly going to depreciate in value. We would say save up, pay cash. Is it incredibly easy to save up 10 grand, 20 grand, or more even to buy that car you want? No, it's not easy, but it's the best move money-wise. And so not everyone agrees with this. I know some people think, well, what's the big deal of financing a vehicle? Well, we would say, yeah, you can always buy a solid used car in that $5,000 to $10,000 price range. And so we would say that's where you should opt instead if you don't have the cash on hand in order to buy the more expensive car that you really want.
All right, so now that you know our stance, right, that we would prefer you to pay cash for a car, please, please, please pay cash for your car.
Are you begging now?
Yes, seriously. But the thing is, like, I know not everybody is going to listen to us. And so if you do decide that you don't want to listen to us, you're going to be you and you are going to take out a loan. We want you to be smart about it. We don't want you to become a payment buyer where you are only focused on the amount that you're paying every single month when you have to make that car payment.
Yeah. So many people, they focus on the payment that they're going to pay, and they're willing to stretch out that car loan indefinitely essentially to make that car payment make sense for them.
Exactly. Yeah. We want you to keep the length of your car loan reasonable, like around 36 months, because that would ensure that you aren't buying a car that you can't afford. Because, yeah, if you do have to stretch that out to something like 72 months or even more in order to buy the car that you want, you need to go back to the drawing board and you need to pick another car, something that you can afford. If you don't do this, you are setting yourself up for potentially big financial problems if you finance a car over a longer period of time. That's when you might end up owing more on the car than it's actually worth because it's been years since you actually purchased the dang thing.
That's right. Then you get in an accident and you're underwater, and that puts you in a bind financially. And so the other thing too is where you get financing matters, right? This could be the difference between an interest rate of like 2.5% or 12%, or even bigger. The gap could be even larger. And that's going to impact your monthly payment as well as the total amount that you pay in interest over the life of that loan. And so instead of just going to a lot, a used car lot, and buying that car there and financing it as well, the best thing to do and the simplest thing to do is to check with your local credit union before you head out to go shopping. Get approved for a loan there before you start to look around for vehicles. But again, we would say skip all this hassle and just pay with cash. That is by far the best method. But if you are going to finance your car, make sure that you're getting that financing from a local credit union. That's where you're going to get the best rates. And that's going to save you money over time.
But again, forget all that and just pay cash.
Pay cash.
All right, let's keep moving. Let's say you found your car. It's adorable. And you can easily afford it. That's great, right? What is next is that you need to run a vehicle history report on a site like Carfax. You want to make sure that you are getting it checked out. That's going to tip you off to the history of the car. It's going to let you the previous ownership, any accidents that may have occurred. And then after that, you actually want to get it checked out by an independent mechanic before you purchase it. This is one of those instances where you got to do something, you know you should do it, but you're going to be so tempted to skip the step because it's going to require some extra legwork from you. If you're buying from CarMax or Carvana, you can go ahead and buy it because of that 7-day return window. That's something I was able to take advantage of when we purchased our Odyssey from Carvana. I had plenty of time to go get that checked out at a Honda mechanic, and he was able to discover that that timing belt needed to be replaced, and that was something that Carvana covered for me. So again, that's one of the advantages for some of those big sites like that. But if you're buying from a private seller, this needs to be a condition of the sale. You need to have worked out ahead of time that you have the option or the ability to go and get this thing checked out. You know, the paint job might look sweet, but you want to make sure that you aren't buying a money pit.
Yeah, for sure. I've done that many times, Matt, taking that car to my mechanic. And sometimes he's like, yep, looks great. You should buy this. And other times he's like, ooh, not so much. And I have to say, bye, thank you, but I'm not going to purchase your car. Mm-hmm. And one other thing I think that makes sense in today's climate that's worth stressing when you want to find a good deal on a used car is that it might even make sense to fly somewhere to buy the car that you want. That might sound strange. It's like, well, aren't there plenty of used cars right near where I live? Well, yeah, but similar to real estate, pricing dynamics fluctuate in different parts of the country. And supply chain issues might mean you've got to get on a plane to get what you want at the same time. But even before the supply chain issues, Matt, I had a friend looking to buy, of course, a Honda Odyssey, just like you and I drive. She found that the best deal was on a van down in Orlando, Florida. And so she flew down, she bought it, and drove it home. That small inconvenience saved her a couple thousand dollars. And so I would suggest to people, expand your car search beyond the town that you live in. If you want to save even more, you know, it's not necessarily going to always be the best move for you, but especially if you can fly to a city where the plane ticket is going to cost you $75-$80 and the gas on the way back is going to cost you another $100, but you can save $1,500 on the price of the car, then that flight is going to make sense for you.
That's right. And then you can binge listen to How to Money all the way home.
Lucky you at 2x speed.
One other thing to mention, given the pricing insanity in the car market these days, it just makes a lot of sense to hold off as long as you can before upgrading your car if you've determined that you do need to replace it. Timing matters now more than it normally does because we believe that prices are going to come back down to earth, but the car market isn't going to get sorted out instantly, right?
Yeah, it's
going to
take some overnight time.
And so if you can wait until either, you know, later this year, even wait until 2023, that is likely going to ensure that you aren't paying an inflated price due to the supply chain and chip issues that we mentioned earlier.
That's right. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, Matt, we want How to Money listeners to build wealth. And it's not that we want you to drive the crummiest car that you absolutely hate.
It's not punishment.
Exactly. That is not what we want either. Like, I really like my 2006 Honda Odyssey.
We just want what's best for you,
yeah,
for future you. Not for right now you.
And going back to kind of what we said earlier, if you can reframe this choice and you can say, look, it's allowing me to live my life even more fully in these other areas because it's allowing me to reach that goal of financial independence even quicker. It's giving me greater choice in what I do with my day-to-day when it comes to my job. Like, we would say wealth is the fancy car that you don't drive. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
If you want to build wealth.
I've got fancy cars. They're parked in the garage of my Roth IRA.
Those are future fancy cars that I could potentially buy, right? And so, yeah, you're listening to How to Money because you want help building wealth, not because you want to buy the fanciest of the fancy cars. And some of our listeners do like cars more than others. And again, that's okay. Do your thing. You don't have to do it exactly the way we do it. But yeah, if you really want to build wealth, if that's, you know, one of your top tier goals, you'll be more willing to drive something that doesn't look as pristine. You'll be willing to forsake some of those finest amenities or the fanciest new touchscreen in your car, mm-hmm, in order to drive something that's going to help you reach that goal of financial independence more quickly. You might be able to recognize, just like I can, just like Matt can, that the new Rivians are the best looking truck ever made in this world and that you absolutely really, really want one, but at the same time say, nope, not going to do it because my other goals are more important for the time being.
That's right. One other thing real quick. The most popular cars for wealthy folks, this is according to the Millionaire Next Door, are Toyotas and Hondas. So Camrys and Honda Accords, like these are the top pick for folks who have $1 million net worth. The majority of those people aren't driving luxury vehicles. And so it comes down to the question, do you want to look rich or do you want to be rich? The car that you drive has a lot to do with that eventual outcome. And that's why we want you to buy cars the right way.
Yeah, so hopefully that was helpful. And Matt, I think one of the things we mentioned before too is if you have an extra car sitting around, now's a great time to sell it. Now's a great time to actually maybe rethink if you're driving too nice of a car and you're like, man, Matt and Joel, they just kind of got under my skin and now I want to do something and maybe get rid of this car payment or find a way to drive something that's even cheaper. Well, selling one of your cars and becoming a one car family or downgrading to something cheaper and taking that extra cash so that you can sock it away for your future. Now's a perfect time to do that. Take advantage kind of the current market dynamics and save you some money.
And actually, I just realized we did an entire episode dedicated to becoming a one-car family. I just looked it up on my phone. 242. That's episode 242 if you want to be swayed even more to becoming a one-car family.
Well, and we recorded that while we were a two-car family and shortly thereafter.
Oh, that's right.
I took my own medicine.
Oh, I love it.
And we became a one-car family. And so hopefully, maybe this episode will help push some people in that direction too.
All right, let's quickly mention the beer that we enjoyed during this episode. You and I enjoyed a Pothole City, which is a Rocky Road Stout by Pipeworks Brewing Company out of Chicago, Illinois. What were your thoughts on this one, bud?
All right, I'm going to say chocolatey, marshmallowy. It was a perfect winter beer. Like, it's a good, deep, dark stout like this is...
Very dark beer.
Perfect for these, like, cold winter months.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was... Dude, it was super toasty and, like, roasty.
Yeah.
You know, I was totally picking up some of those marshmallow vibes, but it wasn't, like, the fresh out of the plastic bag marshmallow. It was, like a dark brown... Maybe too charred marshmallow, like you're doing some s'mores.
Uh-huh.
Like it had like some of that bitterness.
It caught on fire for a minute.
You're like, oh shoot, and you like blow it out real quick. But it had some of those bitter notes going on. But it provides that balance when you've got that malty sweetness going on. You need some of that roasty bitterness to kind of balance it out. Otherwise, you just have this pure dessert beer, which isn't always going to fly with folks. So I'm glad you and I got to enjoy this one, Pothole City by Pipeworks Brewing.
No doubt. All right, Matt. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. For listeners who want show notes, links to some of the articles we mentioned in this episode, go to our website, howtomoney.com. You'll find them there.
That's right, buddy. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.